This podcast is brought to you by Upcase. Want to become the sort of developer top rail shops like Thoughtbot fight over? Join Upcase today to get the pro training, insider knowledge, access to Thoughtbot developers, and a community of like-minded learners you need. Hone core skills like Vim, Tmux, Git, and Rails by visiting upcase.com/halfoff to get 50% off your first month of Upcase. Let's get that junior out of your title and start leveling up today with Upcase.
And go.
Wow. Boom.
Everything is lit up in orange.
I know, right?
If you look at the software we use, I forgot the name, Audio Hijack.
Pro. It feels it's not the pro version. We're not pros. Hello, this is Tentative Podcast, where we discuss product design. I'm Kyle Fiedler, and with me is Reda Lemedin.
So what's up? It's been a while.
It has been a little while.
Happy New Year, by the way, to you and to our listeners.
Woo!
Yay! Goals. There's a better word for this. The goals you set at the beginning of the year.
Resolutions,
yeah. Well, we tend to use that word for other things, but apparently also means, yeah. So one of the resolutions for the podcast is that we will be swearing more. And I don't think we've talked about this before, but
I was going to say, so in the first episode, we talked about things that we can't say. And now we're starting the new year talking about things that we're going to say more.
This is the first time I'm announcing this. So,
okay. By the way, you already said one of those things that we said we wouldn't say, which was UI, right?
Oh,
or no, it was UX.
UX. You know, I saw recently. Oh, no, let's not get into that. I'm gonna be ranting for a while. But the thing is, like, we can't swear because that will get us an explicit tag on iTunes, which means we will show up in less results. I guess that's how it works. I think, or be bumped down.
Yeah, I just don't think that anyone listens to this in general.
Yeah. Well, I met someone who does, or who did, in 2015, so we'll see. No, we don't have any resolutions. We'll just keep, like, showing up.
Keeping ourselves.
Showing up every 2 weeks, just talking.
Talking.
About stuff, really. Until you sleep.
Yeah, so anyway, let's get on to the topic.
Yes.
We wanted to, like, talk a little bit about, we talked about design process, we talked about design sprints, but we didn't talk about how those things kind of are involved in Thoughtbot's overall process. So that's what I wanted to talk about.
Sure. I'll play the devil's advocate throughout this episode, just to spice things up a little bit. Like, it would be quite boring if it's just an echo chamber of, like, oh, this is great, so let's do this.
Most of the time, and that's what our podcast is for, right?
Yep.
A lot of this stuff is, like, captured in our playbook, which we can put in the show notes. But essentially, we usually kick things off with a design sprint, or even before that, we've started doing a couple days of research, figuring out what the problem is that users are having, and then jumping into a design sprint, trying to validate some of our assumptions about the user, about the problem. And then going from there, we've kind of already covered a lot of that in episodes past, and we'll put the design sprint episode in the show notes as well. We should probably have an episode where we talk about how we do research and usability tests.
Yeah, I'm probably going to sleep on that one.
Okay. I'll have someone else on to do that with me.
I know, I'm joking. I like that. It's mostly like, there is not, like, there are some tips you can share, but it's less controversial. I like controversy. I like things that have issues.
I think you just like going on rants is what you like.
Yeah, that's pretty much that. I can't rant too much about user research.
There isn't
much to rant about anyway. Yeah, but I agree. Maybe we should cover that at some point.
Cool. After that, going forward, I thought it'd be cool to talk about how we populate Trello, how our workflow is in Trello, and how we communicate with our clients and with our developers, and how we continue to do research and usability testing. So jumping off from that point, after the design sprint, what usually happens on the projects I'm on is I pair with a developer in Trello, and we create a bunch of cards for features that we had in the prototype. And each one of the cards is a job story. I personally like having the whole job story as the title of the Trello card. I know some other people at Thoughtbot like having like a short summary and then having the full story inside of the description on the Trello card.
Yeah.
So we work through the prototype, figure out what the jobs are, the job stories for each of the features, and then we prioritize them with the client. Usually it's a matter of us creating all the cards, walking them through how to create cards, and then us prioritizing and showing, basically teaching them how to prioritize or showing them how we do it. And then from that point on, it's a combination of a conversation, basically.
There's typically that 1 hour I spend every week trying to rename all the cards into job cards. I call it the job card hour.
Hopefully that shouldn't be happening. This might be good. That normally happens every once in a while, but
over time.
What I do to fix that, and what we haven't jumped into yet, is we have weekly retrospectives. During those retrospectives, we talk about how we're feeling, how we feel about the work that we completed, and how we're feeling about the upcoming work. And usually, I do believe this is what people do for Scrum meetings, is like take a look at the next grouping of cards or the next, what we think is the next week's worth of cards. Make sure that the stories make sense, make sure that everything's in priority order. And if there are cards that are improperly named, we can, while we're on the call with the client. So the retrospective involves us and the client making sure that, you know, they understand how it was named or how it was worded improperly and wording it with them.
Yeah, but sometimes like you're taking notes directly by creating cards, and usually you just like, you know, it's just blurbs, you don't detail them, and then you have to go back later and actually flesh them out, split them into more cards, because like it depends on how you like, when, at what point you create the cards. If you're in a meeting or in a retrospective, then you can take time and create cards, but sometimes you can't afford that. So you have to go fast and then go back later and do the proper like organization of those.
Yeah.
Again, I'm just like saying this because ideally what you're saying should be always the case, but we're not in a utopia. So in some cases you have to do that sort of stuff.
Yep. So we have a next up column where all those cards sit. And in Trello, we'll move next up cards from the top of the queue to in progress. Usually what I like to do is like I'll take the card from a design standpoint, either mock it. Most of the stuff I'm working on is web apps. I'm coming from that standpoint. And I think you'll have the standpoint of iOS apps. So it might be good to have both of our perspectives. So I'll usually take a card from the top, do design for it, and throw like a screenshot in the card. So when the developer takes it on, they have a good idea of what I was thinking.
Yeah.
And that way it also creates a good discussion. If I am going in the wrong direction, it immediately creates a good discussion on that Trello card. Usually what I'm doing is creating like static HTML and CSS, putting it in a branch, or if it's like a high voltage page, which is a separate static page from the rest of the app, putting that into like master. And that's like the kickoff point.
When do you get your design through the client?
You mean when do I get input from the client?
Yeah.
It depends on the client. Some clients are like really invested into the visual design. And in that case, like I'll involve them as early as possible. For those types of clients, I know the more that I involve them, the happier they'll be. And then for clients that are less opinionated about the visual design and just, in their words, want it to look good,
yeah,
I don't have the need to involve them as early. Like clearly all the screenshots are in there, and if they want to be involved in those conversations, they can be. But for clients that are more opinionated, I'll try and involve them. Like the more communication there, the better, I've always found.
Yeah.
And then being able for them to see my full process of like, you know, early on in the project, like I'm focusing more on user flow, on the product design, making sure that we're building the right features and not wasting their money on building features that people won't use, and then slowly evolving the visual design over time.
Yeah. Did you have trouble in the past of like clients asking, so when can I see the final design?
There is no final design.
That's the right answer, but usually that's not the answer they want.
I think there it's a sit down conversation with them and making sure that they understand that we're working on a web application and it's constantly living and constantly evolving, and there is never going to be a final design. There might be a final design for like launch, but as soon as they launch the next day, you can consider that like new design, right?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, because I found that part sometimes challenging to explain to the client that at no point during this project you'll be looking at something set in stone. If I make a header today, tomorrow that header might look different if we want to prioritize that. And most of our clients get that and enjoy it. But there are some outliers there where you have to basically really say that almost every day. Like, this is not final. Of course, this is not final. This is temporary. This is tentative. The podcast.
This is the tentative podcast.
Yeah, this is like
in your application.
Well, that's the reason why we're calling it tentative, is because a lot of the stuff we do is tentative. Like, here's a design for now with the amount of time I had. It doesn't mean it's perfect. It doesn't mean either that we can't ship with it, but it's here. It's like, it's something. And basically, I always go with the idea of like minimum viable, it's not product, but more like a feature.
Minimum viable design.
Minimum viable design. Like, yeah, basically it answers the questions of, is this accessible? Is this usable? Does this not look like crap? And if it answers like yes, yes, and yes, I think, then it's a good thing to
ship. There are points where like the visual design though can and might be more important. Like, I have a client that wanted more highly polished visual design for their prototype, and they had valid reasons for that. They had a few, one of them being the people that they were bringing their prototype to wouldn't have taken the prototype seriously unless it had highly polished visual design. They were also trying to get investors, and as much as we'll probably hate seeing this or hate hearing it, but like visual design is one of the things that people will probably comment on the most. At least they wanted to go into those meetings with something that was visually stunning. So like in that case, like I didn't worry about HTML and CSS. I was just using Photoshop and putting it into an, you know, Envision prototype, so that like I basically didn't worry about something else. But in the end, like there's give and take there. The way that we work is based on time. So the sacrifice that they ended up making was probably paying for a little more than what our normal prototype would be, because it took me some extra time to do that design. And in the prototype, it was Envision as opposed to maybe something that could have been ported over to the web easier.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. You brought up a point earlier about the differences between web and iOS, and the big picture is that there are not many, or at least we want that there are as few differences as possible. But there are some nuances, because mostly related to the fact that sometimes it's easier to get stuff validated by the client before going ahead and building it, just because some things do take more time on iOS than they do on the web. Especially on a new project, when you're just getting started, like a lot of things like need that sort of like initial push. So you need to set up your color palette, and you need to know, but like, you know, a bunch of little things like that you get for free when you're in a web project. And in the beginning, especially, it probably more useful to make everyone converge on a version and then build it for like a specific feature. I did the project in the past where we did exactly the web way of doing things, and it was a little bit hard to explain to the client that things are not set in stone. But I think this has less to do with the fact that it was iOS and more to do with communication. But I understand that it's not always possible to follow exactly the same process. For one thing, for instance, on Rails apps, we tend to use High Voltage, which is a gem that allows you to have static pages in a Rails app. In iOS, there's no such a thing. You can still create dummy views and things like that, but the bar is a little bit higher than just dropping a page in a folder and go into a URL. It requires a little bit more tinkering to link it with the rest of the app. And we're actively thinking of ways we can improve that, or I am personally, with the help of Jack, who is my iOS developer colleague here in Stockholm, of like ways we can make that process easier. Overall, like the ideas are the same. We don't work with mocks and we don't work with a waterfall process where designer finishes everything and then hands it over to the developer. That's pretty much the only thing we don't want to.
First of all, if you guys build something, can you call it High OS Voltage?
Wow, that's insane. No, that's High OS Voltage.
High OS Voltage. Come on. That could be
interesting. Yeah, that could be interesting. I think right now we're calling it Sketch Kit or something like that.
That's so much worse.
All right, we'll call it High OS.
So we were... Next up is prioritize. We're doing something in progress. I've added design to it. There are also times where I think the feature is necessary and we're building it out. And then sometimes it's easier for me to just style and clean up markup after the feature has been built.
Yeah.
And what happens there is like the developer will go off of sketches that I've done, or we'll talk in person and whiteboard together, and then they'll build the thing. And then put it in a branch, and I'll style it in that branch. So once we feel like it's ready to go, we'll put it into a code review column so that all of our HTML, CSS, and all the other code gets reviewed. We'll post a link into our design Slack room and get someone to look at it for us. Make sure, in that case, a lot of it's down to the code, but I think we're also reviewing the design at the same time. We'll do design reviews kind of ad hoc in this process. So I don't know about you, but usually what I'm doing, we also have a design review channel, and I'll throw, once I feel like more confident about the visual design, I'll throw screenshots in there and get feedback on the visual design. And usually like I try to have, if I'm on the project by myself, I've been trying to have like a product design buddy, so that when I make product design decisions or if I have questions about the app, I can reach out to them and get feedback there.
Yeah.
But those are all kind of outside of this like Trello queue process. Once we get a thumbs up from the code review, we're putting it onto a staging and having the client comb through it.
Yeah, this is another area where it's different depending on the platform. So for the web, we put it into staging. For iOS, if we have a beta, then we send it to the beta. Typically, we try to have a beta set up day one so that client can be able to, you know, follow the progress. We did that in my last iOS project. If the client has internal developers, we tend to not do this stuff for them. Like, they can just build it, and or if the client is a little bit more tech savvy, then they can very much build it on their own. But the point is that they need to look at it somewhere to provide feedback,
right?
So that's the idea.
So part of that too, so each feature for me, like I like to try and prototype it first, and then I'll do either weekly or biweekly usability user interview tests where I'm testing out the features and doing the same thing that we're doing in the design sprint. And there it's just to like make sure again that we're validating the products before we're building them. So if I'm usability testing those high voltage pages, which is nice. And then once it's a go, I'll throw the job all the way back to next up column for the developers to look at and actually build real features as opposed to fake ones.
And then
they'll actually build. We'll go through that same process. I think like one of the things that I've noticed is the life of one card isn't always the same.
No.
And for me, two, like once we've gotten to it on staging, and so the client has the ability to accept or reject. If they reject, they put it back on the top of Next Up and explain why they rejected it. I'll use the usability tests as a similar test of like, is this solving their problem? Is this a problem they have? And I'll usually go through the job story. So the job story has three parts: the context, the motivation, and then the expected outcome. And the motivation, those are, it's early morning on Friday. I think
fine.
Those are right.
It's fine. It's okay. You can say whatever words, like motivation, expectation, awesomeness. It works.
We can point to job story articles for that.
Yeah.
But so
jobs to be done.
Right. So what I'm doing is I'm breaking that into the three parts of the story, and like making sure that they have that context, that they have the motivation, and we're right on the expected outcome, and then that the story is solved by the features that we built. And if it is, like, we put it into a live and monitoring column. The other thing that I've done in the past is once it's in live and monitoring, the way that we build features is we try to build the most minimal possible. We make sure that people can solve the problem that they're trying to solve, but at the least amount of development as possible, again, to make sure that we're validating everything. And
yeah.
One of the things that I've been doing is like the job doesn't change, but sometimes we will want to polish up the experience. So I'll bring the job card for like navigation. That's probably going to be a bad example.
Do you like pull it back from live or?
Yeah, so we'll pull it back from live and monitoring, and we'll pull it into Next Up, and we'll talk about how we want to polish up the features that are solving that job story.
So you create new cards or you just update the same card?
Update the same card. Usually there's a lot of learning that goes into each one of the cards and communication. So like I don't want to lose that. And the same goes for a lot of code. Like one of the things that we don't like doing as much as possible is like if there's an existing code base, dumping the code base and starting from scratch. And that's because there's like knowledge in that code base, whether we know it or not. And I mean, there are exceptions to the rule, to that rule. Like there are code bases that are so bad that like it's easier to dump it, and the knowledge, the time that it'll take to regain the knowledge versus the time that it'll take to fix the code base is less.
Yeah, so this is an interesting thing because I don't think I've done it in the past, and now you made me want to try it. And I don't think this what you're describing is typical way we do it. I feel like we create cards whenever we have new items. I've never heard someone saying that they use the same, they recycle cards.
I've started doing this on the projects that I've been on for a longer amount of time, just because like the job is the same, right? Like,
yeah, that's if you look at it, what you're saying makes sense. That's why I'm saying that you made me want to try it, because the job does not change. Your solution is changing, but the goal is still the same.
Right.
So, yeah, it totally makes sense. I think the only thing that I would feel a little bit concerned about is that some clients might feel that they're just going in a loop, like you're not making progress, because the only way to see progress in Trello is seeing the live column fill up and the Next Up column thin down. And if you just keep pulling back stuff to improve it, then it's just going to feel like stuff is not moving forward.
But that's honestly like the truth, right? Like you're hopefully just continuing to polish the problems that you're solving, and at times adding new smaller problems to solve within the app. It is essentially a loop. So it's the truth.
It's the truth.
And you can't
handle the truth.
You can't handle the truth. No, I think there's, again, like a lot of this is communication with the client. Those weekly retrospectives, making sure you're communicating with the whole team in Slack. This is why a lot of the times we love having co-located teams and having the clients in our office, is because that cuts down on the barriers for communication. It's not always possible, and we don't always do that. And in fact, a lot of the projects I've been late on lately are all remote, but it does help. But tools like Trello, being able to talk back and forth on Trello, being able to talk back and forth on Slack. So every project has its own dedicated Slack room, Slack channel, and we expect the client to be in it so that we'll be able to answer questions quickly and get their opinion quickly. And then, you know, having also the ability to jump on a phone call or a hangout, making sure that it's, everyone knows that that expectation is set, that people can do that as often as they need. Sometimes it's like easier to talk things out than to be able to type things out.
Yeah.
So this all sounds good and dandy, but I would be curious to know, like, what sort of pain points you have as Kyle Fiedler with this process, or like areas you see there's room for improvement and things like that.
So I think the biggest room for improvement over the last couple projects is the onboarding. I think that's where later on in the process, we hit road bumps and speed bumps or whatever the heck you want to call them.
Yeah.
Like making sure the client is fully bought into the way that we build software and understands that it is a very iterative process, both in the design and in the refinement of how we're solving the problem. But we're doing that because we don't want to waste their money. We don't want them to go down into a rabbit hole and spend a lot of money on features that won't actually solve users' problems.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I think it's very exclusive to, you know, like web shops and consultancies. I'm not sure. Well, I mean, the last time I was in a product company, we had other issues with like budget and things like that, but I'm not sure like how more nimble product companies deal with these cases. But what I wanted to say is that this is some extra challenge for us in this industry.
Right. So I think the onboarding process is the biggest thing that we can continue to improve. And essentially, like, I think all of the problems that we've had with clients in the past is just come down to communication.
That's true. Yeah.
And whether it's we're not communicating really well or they're not communicating really well, like sometimes it's one or the other and sometimes it's really both.
Yeah.
Making sure that like all of their decisions are being transparent and all of our, like why we're encouraging them to make certain decisions is really transparent, I think is really important.
Yeah, I agree that communication is a big part of our job, and I usually say that it's like the hardest job for me is not figure out technical problems, it's actually to explain how what it makes to actually make good software. And it's sometimes it's a little bit harder than it sounds. Before we wrap up, I had something to say. So a lot of the things you said seem to be centered around clients, but I'd be curious if you still do, or how much of this you do when you're working on your side projects and things where you're the only person who is involved. Do you still follow this process, or you're just like, nah, screw it, I'll do it my way?
I've been stalled on it, but I have like a toy Rails app that I've been working on, and I've followed this process still. For me, like, I haven't cared about acceptance because the project is there for me mostly to learn.
Yeah.
And I haven't cared about validation because, again, I'm building the project to learn. I think if I was treating it like a project that I was going to make money on, I would still follow the process. And I still pretty much do. So one of the things that we didn't talk about is on the far left, the first two columns for me are the overarching job story. So what is either the job story or the problem statement that we have in the design sprint. And that way, like whenever I'm looking at cards as a designer, and I encourage my clients to do this too, is like look at the job story on the card and then look back at that overarching goal, the overarching problem, the overarching job story, and make sure that the features that we're building are, and the jobs that we're trying to solve, the smaller jobs that we're trying to solve, all relate back to that overarching problem statement, job to be done.
Yeah.
And then in the second to left column is a discussion column of ideas and things that aren't quite actionable yet. And so my personal project has a ton. Like, I don't have the overarching job story just because I don't care. Again, like, it's solving a problem for me, and it's really mostly the job is for me to learn, which doesn't need to be explicitly stated for me.
Yeah.
But like, I do go through ideas and discussions, and I'll bring jobs. I write out job stories and put them into next up, put next up into, you know, some sort of doing column.
Yeah.
And then have a done column. And for me, like, it's nice to see what's been done. And again, still doing the bringing the done card all the way back to the top of next up and you know, polishing up or making the feature nicer.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually noticed that I can't really get stuff done without like Trello or something similar. I still use Trello because I have Trello Gold and I like it. Well, it's not all right. I mean, that's another topic, but I think it does well the job like 80% of the time. There are some small issues here and there, but I really need to have a visual representation of the progress, even if it's a side project. And usually I spend 2 weeks on something without a Trello board and just feel lost. Like, so what was the next thing I wanted to work on? Whatever. Like, and I don't use it just for listing the things, but also like for prioritizing things. What I'm trying to say is that it becomes a habit that you can't like do without. And I think that's a good thing. I mean, even PRs, I tend to open PRs that I review myself. Obviously, I don't do the ship it emoji because that would be a little bit scary. But I just review it. And if I think it's good, I just merge it.
That's better than me. I just, on my personal projects, commit to master.
I do that if it's small change, but if
screw branches.
If I'm doing something quite big, I want to have the option of falling back to master if stuff doesn't go well. So I tend to do that. And PRs also is a nice way to visualize the changes. And
that's true. Know,
so I tend to do that even on projects where I'm the only person. And this could only also be like for client work, because like sometimes I am the only person on a client project, and I tend to bring people, you know, to review my PRs and stuff. But sometimes like it's not some small changes don't require PR, but I still open it, review it, and then merge it. If you know, especially like CSS, small CSS changes and that. But I just like, because a lot of times you might change something without knowing it. So it's important to follow a good process in that regard.
Yep.
And also attaching screenshots to PRs is really useful. And animation, if you have transitions and stuff, also right. Is very useful.
Animated GIFs for the win.
It solves a lot of like communication issues. And I've been doing that on every project that involves the UI, especially since you pull in people from outside that project. And to take the time to explain what's going on in text is going to take a lot of time. Whereas like, here's a screenshot, here's the landing page, you click here, you go here, you do this form, and that's it. And people get it. So I like that. And you should be doing it.
Yeah, I've taken to doing always adding a screenshot or an animated GIF of the interface. And also linking to the Trello card so that like for the person who's reviewing it that's not on the project, they can like, if they want to, quickly read through the Trello card of what the job story is and any background on it, and then see what's going on. I feel like seeing what's going on is super important for CSS and HTML.
Yeah, and also it's GIF, not GIF.
It's GIF.
I'm sorry, but the guy who created the thing wants it to be called GIF.
It's also stupid.
All right, Keeley, thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you, Red A.
All right, I started this. I shouldn't have. But yeah. Well, thank you, listeners, for listening to us. I mean, it's hard. So yeah, this was episode 20 of tentative. Hope you enjoyed it. If you didn't, please let us know. You can email us at hosts@tentative.fm or write us on Twitter at tentativefm. It's one word. You can rate us on iTunes. And yeah, so get in touch and say hi. We'd love to know who listens to us.